Thank you for joining the conversation today here at the Dakotan. I'm Jonathan Starr. Today, I'm joined by Governor Kelly Armstrong. Thank you so much for doing this, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
I should say governor. I'm sorry.
God, I like it when people... It's weird. I had a friend who was a lifelong friend of mine, and he became a judge. And I don't think I've called him anything but judge since he got elected. And so there's a little of that that goes on with governor. My favorite is when my old Senate colleagues actually call me Kelly, and then they like catch themselves. And I'm like, no, I'd appreciate it if you called me Kelly.
Right. No, that's good. First off, this is a huge thing. And because of the way that North Dakota politics works, you're thrown into the middle of a legislative session. It's all fun. You're off to the races, but it's a big deal to become governor of North Dakota. So how has that been for you?
So one of the biggest surprises I had, right? Because I ran statewide. I mean, I was the only member of Congress in 18, 20, and 22. One of the weird things that has been interesting is how much more people, like I was on a lot of airplanes, right? When I was a member of Congress, I was on airplanes once a week. Yeah. Everybody's like, hey, there's Kelly. And now like people want to like take their picture, and it's different how much bigger of a deal it is than even I necessarily thought it was, you know, because I had such a great relationship with Governor Burgum and Governor Dalrymple before that I never really saw that side of it. But we did an event with a bunch of high school kids yesterday, and they were just so fired up that the governor was there. So, I mean, I treat it the same way. We take the job really seriously. We don't take ourselves too seriously, but the position matters. And when the position shows up at your event and you're a bunch of high school kids, doing something, I take that part of it's humbling that they are excited about it, but I also think it's important that we do it.
Right, for sure. It feels like in the statements that you've made over the years that in some ways, and obviously serving as a representative for the state of North Dakota is huge as well, but in some ways perception, maybe my view of it, it seems like this is almost a dream of yours. Do you ever just wake up and just, you haven't had time to, but do you think there will be a moment where you just sit back, lean back and be like, wow, this is incredible? Or does it always work?
No, it's not always work. We had some House appropriators over at the governor's residence today. And I took the time because I wanted to make sure when we told them what we were asking for, that they recognize that I understand how humbling it is and how like unbelievably fortunate I have to even have the opportunity to live in the governor's residence.
Right.
And yesterday, I'll talk about the kids again. Like when you sit down and realize how excited people are, I think I'm pretty cool, but nobody's just excited if Kelly Armstrong shows up to something. Right. But being the governor of North Dakota is, and watching people like really get excited about it, that gives you as good an answer as any as to why it is really important and why, you know, the position in and of itself and my opportunity to hold it for the next 4 years really, really matters. And it matters. It's humbling every day.
Absolutely. There's a lot of activity going on in Bismarck right now, of course, because it is that season. One of the missions that you've been on from day one has been property tax reform. Obviously, there's a bill down in Bismarck, 1176, that talks about reform and has been deemed the governor's bill. There's been a lot of changes that's happened to this. And so first off, do you see this bill being executed as kind of your vision initially, where still over 10 years, this will solve the property tax problem in North Dakota?
Well, I think it solves a lot of the property tax problem in North Dakota immediately. I mean, the short version numbers are 3 out of 4 houses would qualify and 1 out of 3 would have no property taxes in the first biennium. That's a pretty significant chunk. You know, the intent language came out of it in the House, which is, I mean, part of how you keep that legacy fund earnings stream contributing. But I don't worry as much about that. And the reason I don't is because the language that classifies a new primary residence is still in the bill. And so by at least the second year of the biennium, people aren't going to have to apply for it. It will be taken off on the front end. And I've been around politics long enough to know that once you offer something like that to citizens, it's really difficult to come back and say, okay, you don't get that anymore, particularly in the tax relief portion.
Yeah. And I think the application process is something that's unique about it right now. And if that begins to fade away, that would widen the impact of it. Of course, I think still there was like 92% or something of eligible people applied for it.
But also right, redesignating a new class of property, which is primary residential. And I mean, so you don't do that if you're not intending to continue down this road. And I can tell you, at least for the next 4 years, we'll be intending to continue down this road.
We were talking with a real estate agent, and he said that because it's going to affect lower end homes, a home that's worth $100,000, $150,000, a lot differently than a home that's worth $500,000. Because a $100,000 home in some areas, the property taxes will be fully covered. Do you think it will have any effect, or do you even put too much concern of any effect that would have on the housing market overall in North Dakota?
Well, I think that if you deal with it, I think I would frame it the other way, because I have framed it the other way. I think it was very, particularly in tax policy, but in policy in general, there's very few times where you get the best of both worlds. And what I mean by that is this immediately will affect the people who need it the most. Mm-hmm. But over the course of time, the people who pay the most will get the most relief. So, yeah. I mean, you very rarely get that win-win in tax policy, right? It doesn't matter if it's income tax policy, property tax policy. So you have the ability to deliver this to the people who absolutely can afford it the least, the quickest, but also at the same time, if you allow this legacy fund stream to grow, the people who pay the most will get the most relief. So I think as you phase in through this, I don't foresee that necessarily as being a large scale issue.
Yeah, very good. Probably the most controversial part of this bill is not the relief portion, it's the capping portion. Obviously, there's been letters that have been sent, there's been statements that have been made about the 3% cap that would go on to the cities. Is that high enough? That's the biggest question I have.
Well, I think it's high enough when you have the ability to go to the voters and ask for them to waive the cap. This is part of the collaborative process of this, which I appreciate so much more than DC. I think voters are smart. I think politicians in election time treat voters like they're not smart, but I think voters are smart. Right. And voting, if your county commission, your city commission, your school board makes a compelling case as to why this is essential to the betterment of your community, I think you have a chance of doing that. I also think you have a better chance of passing things like that when people aren't being bled to death by property taxes. But I do think that the number is the right place to start, because I think overall in property taxes, and I was part of this, right? I was in the state legislature when we voted for the 20 mils on social services. And far too often the conversation in taxes has been between state governments and local governments. And I'd prefer to reset that narrative and have a conversation between government and taxpayers. And if this valuation goes through, and if the buy down portion of this goes through, the state will be paying over 50% of the local share of property taxes. 80% in K-12, 20 mils social services, this part portion of it, we have a say in how fast those budgets grow. And I think that the other answer is we get to come back in 2 years. Yep. And if a community like Minot or a community like Fargo or wherever says this is untenable under these rates, we can always go back and fix that. But I'd like to reset the narrative a little bit and say we cannot... The state government can't continue to grow at the sustained growth that's been going on over the last 20 years. Right. And a lot of that was needed. We have 168,000 new people, rapid growth. We're getting younger. Communities that were dying are growing. That's fantastic. But the other answer to that is we can't just continue to buy down the local share of property taxes and not actually deliver that relief directly to the taxpayer. And I think this does that.
You know, that's one part that I do appreciate about it is if there should be a great opportunity for the taxpayers actually to feel the relief with a capping. I think there's going to be tax reform. Reform insinuates that there's got to be something major change beyond just giving a check or credit to the people. And so I think the cap is necessary. 3%, I was running numbers for Minot's budget. For the last three budgets, the mill levy has gone down for the city, but the property tax amount has increased. Yeah. Beyond 3%.
Really, if you structurally talk about what this has happened, is the buy downs have done what we've wanted them to do But nobody ever reapportions Mills. And we, early on in June, you know, we get through the primary and there was a conversation whether it should be Mills, whether it should be Cash, where it should, I mean,
right,
how you do it. And I just, you know, every community does Mills differently, but 1450 is 1450 everywhere. And
right,
and so, and in some communities, specials are actually more of a frustration for people than property tax, but we can't get into the game of like completely controlling every single local decision. What we can do is say, here, these are the parameters on your property tax budget. How you determine that after that is up to you. But if you are going to continue to if you are going to continue to get this state relief, we're going to require you to fit in these basic parameters. And I have no doubt that in 2 years from now, we'll come back and somebody will be will look at us and say, we made it through this biennium, but if you don't make some tweaks or some changes, we're going to have some real problems in the next biennium. But I would prefer that case be presented that way than the way it's always been. Well, we understand the need for caps, but don't do them.
Right. Yeah, for sure. In this bill, there was not a change to the taxing method. Right now, it's based off the assessed value, and there was a lot of talk that maybe we should look at a different way. And to be fair, I've never went to a restaurant where they ask me how much I make, and then that determines how much I'm going to spend at the restaurant. But that's basically what we do when it goes to housing, is based off the value of the house is how much we're going to tax, not based off the use, not based off of this actual impact that the house has on the community. What's your response to those that think that maybe a different assessment value should be used?
One, the infrastructure you need to restructure assessment and all of that is a lot, and particularly in rural areas and different communities. But the other thing I would say is other than like real scarcity, like oil boom scarcity over there at the beginning of the boom, everything about your house going up in value is good.
Right.
It's good for you as the homeowner if you ever sell it. It's good for the community because it means that there's a lot of things that are coming into the community versus, I mean, communities that used to be dying are growing. Housing prices are going up. It's good for the state because it means you have economic growth. The only place where the value of your house isn't a positive is if you're a retired cop and a retired teacher on a fixed income,
right. And
the valuation of your house is taxing you out of your home. So if you decouple that valuation from growth and or cap that growth at 3%,
right. Then
all of a sudden, all of the benefits to having an increase in home price go up, and the one real place where it hurts you goes, we can control that.
Very good. So obviously there's been a lot of statements that have been made about this property tax issue, and overwhelmingly we've heard from the legislator that people have spoken, we're trying to do what the people want done. But, and this is maybe a little bit unfair, but it feels like, while this is great, and I think that's appreciated by a lot of people in North Dakota, it's interesting the amount of conversations that have been had about term limits in North Dakota in the legislature after the people had spoken. And what is your view on that? Obviously, the term limits doesn't affect you like it does the legislature. Should they leave it alone? Should they go after it? How do you view it?
I have the same term limit the legislature has, which is 8 years.
Yeah.
So let's start with, I hate term limits. I hate telling people who they can and can't vote for.
Right.
Again, I think this is implying that voters aren't smart enough to make the correct decision. That being said, term limits exist.
Right.
You know, I was sitting on the dais, you know, I was in the legislature or state Senate until 2018. There's 47 members of the Senate. I had only served with 17 of them.
Wow.
70% of the Republican conference in Congress has never served prior to Trump being elected in 2016. I think the narrative on term limits and the reality are different. That being said, the Constitution is pretty clear, and I generally don't support a lot of things that I think are in violation of the state Constitution, whether I agree with it or not. I think you run the risk of potentially believing, again, as part of that, I think if people want to change term limits, they should go collect the signatures and make the case.
Go about it the same way it got put into place. That makes sense. Good times there. All right. So in my opinion, this legislative cycle has been a little bit different in that There's been, and it comes up every time, but it feels like this year there's been a lot of priority placed on social issues coming out of the gate. A lot of those have faded to the back now, as part of the voting process and all that. But there were a lot of them, resolutions about marriage, about declaring Jesus Christ as King of the world, congratulating Donald Trump on his victory, and a couple more that we'll talk about. But just off the bat, some of these are, it feels like, I mean, we're already at over 1,000 bills, and it feels like they're almost just time wasters. Are these things that should keep on coming up when we're not talking about actually legislation? We're just talking about resolutions, about statements, about North Dakota making a statement on the map. Is this something that should be coming up?
I am a huge fan of legislation that actually accomplishes something. I'm less of a fan about declaratory judgments that actually have no force and effect on any issue. Mm-hmm. I just, like, whatever your underlying feeling on gay marriage is,
right,
the Supreme Court of the United States does not care what the North Dakota legislature sends them as a statement. And so if you know that up front, then you have 81 days. We have the most unique legislature in the country. Nebraska has a unicameral, but a rank and file member of the North Dakota legislature has more power than any rank and file legislator anywhere in the country. When I chaired the Senate Judiciary Committee, I couldn't put a bill in the drawer. I couldn't kill a bill. I couldn't not hear a bill. After spending 6 years in Congress, I very much like North Dakota's version better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would be nice if we concentrated on things that actually effectuate, you know, change. But the benefit to that is each and every one of those had somebody bring it. It got a vote in a committee and it got a vote on the floor. My concern, particularly when you start talking about term limits and annual sessions, is there's no real way to do that without limiting bill count. And I don't want North Dakota to lose what makes it special. And right. I think one of the ways you could do that is, A, figure out how many different people are running a bill surrounding the same issue and figure out a way in which to communicate with each other. Because here's the other answer. I don't think anybody's ever won a North Dakota legislative race by being a prime sponsor versus a co-sponsor of any piece of legislation.
Yeah.
So the pride and authorship part of that could go away to some, more Republicans, particularly probably in this case working together. But, I don't weigh in on resolutions because they don't end up at my desk unless I'm asked. But if I am asked, I'll tell you when the ones I think are a waste of time.
Yeah, for sure. I going back to the co-sponsoring, primary sponsor, all that, it seems like we felt that a lot with the property tax. Everybody had their way of how property tax should be fixed. And if there was some collaboration that was, and this isn't a slam at the Mike Nathie's bill or anything else, it's just in general, if there was more collaboration that was done before we got to session, perhaps there could have been more refining that was already done.
Although I think to some degree that happened. There were basically four, pieces. You had Ben Koppelman's version, you had Robin Weiss's version, you had Lauser's version, and you had Nathie's version. And I would say that those four are very different ways to approach it. Mm-hmm. They're all dealing with property tax, but they're all dealing with it very differently. You know, we had heard prior to the session that there were up to 60 bills that were going to be introduced on property tax.
Right.
I think in this particular case, I think the fact that there were four different bills that took the issue very seriously. I mean, I obviously have one I like more than the other three, but that doesn't mean the other three didn't have merit. And right. I think it proves to the North Dakota citizens that, you know, Measure 4 failed and failed pretty significantly.
It did.
But there are a lot of people, and I know you've talked to people as well, that voted no on Measure 4 that aren't waiting another 12 years for the legislature to engage in this conversation.
Right.
So, I think there's a give and a take to that. But I also think, you know, legislative council is not the legislature's lawyer. They are each individual legislator's lawyer when that individual legislator wants to work on a piece of legislation. So they have that essentially that attorney-client relationship. But I do think the legislature gets to decide how they do business. They don't need the governor weighing in on that. But I do think there's probably ways in which you could do some of that still allows each individual legislator to have that autonomy, which I think is so unique in North Dakota.
Absolutely. So going back to some of the social issue bills, resolutions, but specifically a bill, there was one that came up about criminalizing abortion. And already North Dakota has very strong abortion laws. And this is a touchy subject. We've talked with people on this and we'll continue the conversation about it. But how strict do you see North Dakota getting on this? Is it something where we should go as far as criminalizing it?
Well, I don't think you criminalize the woman who gets one. I think you lose the North Dakota public the minute you do that. I think it's the wrong approach. Mm-hmm. I think it actually will swing the pendulum back farther and faster than you could possibly fathom, and rightfully so. I have, you know, a pretty unique, I think, take on this as governor, because I was the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee in North Dakota when we passed what I think is some of the best pro-life law in the country. We're also currently in litigation on at least a little bit of that. We don't have an abortion clinic in North Dakota right now. I think we should get that law settled. We should make sure we know where that sits and how that is effect. And I think the Attorney General has been very clear that he's going to defend North Dakota's law. And then the only practical, not legal part of this that I've said, and I will continue to say, is in those rare instances where you have those medical exceptions and those medical emergencies that are occurring, I want emergency room doctors to be doctors. I don't want them to be lawyers. And so those are the arguments that are, quite frankly, a very small minority of the cases that occur, but they drive the most emotional, and by the way, from a societal standpoint and from a very personal standpoint. So getting that right is important too. But I think North Dakota's pro-life law is really, really good. I think we should be proud of it. I think we should defend it. And I think we are in a really good position to do that moving forward.
Very good. Appreciate you talking about the social issues. I know those are sometimes the more interesting topics.
I was on judiciary in the state Senate. I was on judiciary in Congress. I always get frustrated when people say culture war issues, because that's a pejorative that some people give, but I can tell you, as somebody who does a lot of town halls, these are issues people care about and they deserve to know where I'm at on them.
Absolutely. There's a bill that was brought up that to prompt an audit, and it potentially could be an out-of-state audit. It could be potentially an in-state audit. It just depends on how it's done of the Department of Commerce. This is still obviously being worked through. Maybe it doesn't even happen. But part of that, I mean, the Department of Commerce recently, it got a lot of attention. There was a $600,000 grant that seemed like it was pretty much already identified to go to one person that was part of a previous audit that came out. And there's been a string of other things that have come out. And now they're there are some allegations that are at least coming up against them with this stuff going on in Dunseith. First off, is commerce, it feels like there could be some weird things going on with commerce. Is commerce healthy for North Dakota? Is this something that needs to be looked at being revamped on how it's being executed in North Dakota?
I have a different take on it to begin with. I brought in my own commerce director. I think, you know, when you're talking about workforce and development and a lot of different things that commerce engages in, I think North Dakota is poised for data centers. I mean, there's a lot of different things, but I also know there's a lot of communities across North Dakota that if you can give them a little help and they get, you know, some business that has 8 employees, that's 8 families that moves into a small community in North Dakota. I want people to trust, whether it's the Lyft program in commerce, whether it's destination development, whether it's all of that. The more transparent we can be, and these aren't all big dollar issues. A lot of these sometimes are small dollar issues. So I basically think that there are things that we will do differently in commerce than have maybe done before. And that transparency to that is going to be important. But also, one thing that I am really, really cognizant of is I don't want state dollars going to compete against existing private sector business. You know, there are places where you are, you know, encouraging new technology or new investment in a community, that is absolutely the appropriate role of government. And then there are places where you are picking winners and losers, and that is not the role of government. And so a lot of it is personnel makes policy, and we are resetting the table internally, just because I think I have Commerce Commissioner Shilkin and I have a little different viewpoint about a view of how commerce should work maybe than it has in the past to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes I think there's a perception with commerce, at least in the past, and it's a really great point. We're at a turn right now where we get to fill out the new administration that you're bringing in, and so far it's been very positive. But
still a honeymoon.
Yeah, still the honeymoon. But in the past, it's kind of felt like sometimes commerce, if you knew the right person within commerce, money would go there a little more freely, and perhaps more transparency would help. And I think that was some of the feelings that was going on with, and we'll just address it briefly. We've talked about Dunseith a lot, had some interviews with the businessman that is up in Dunseith, and with the misuse of funds, allegations and stuff like this. I don't know how familiar you are with it. Obviously, the state might be getting more familiar with it, or at least certain people in the state. But is this do you feel like this is true, where there is, if you know somebody, you're going to get your stuff done? If you don't, then potentially the state.
I can 100% guarantee you that is not true today. Like, I don't, yeah. I mean, you talked about the audit earlier. I'm always comfortable with audits. I think the reason they want an outside organization to do that is because there is mistrust. I think, you know, whether it's the auditor's office or the state, but I don't think it does any good to do the audit unless the people who are asking for it are going to trust the results. So we'll leave that up to them how to do it. The flip side to Dunseith, and this is where I like have maybe a little more of a unique response to some of this stuff. And sorry, you can take me out of the courtroom, but you can't take the trial lawyer out of my personality. When you threaten to sue, or when you actually instigate a letter to sue, then we're going to talk to the lawyers. We're no longer talking to the governor anymore about the issue. Right. That's the way it works. So I think moving forward on that project, my answer is the businessman has now at least initiated the process of initiating a lawsuit. And that's where we're at moving forward on that. Now, looking back about auditing commerce in general and doing it in a way in which people will feel more comfortable with, yeah, I'm always supportive of that, provided we can do it in a reasonable and rational manner.
Absolutely. Appreciate that. Well, as you look forward to the second half of legislative session and we start getting, you get to start signing more bills. I know you've signed maybe a couple already, but you get to sign more. What are some of the most exciting things that you're looking forward to come out of this?
Obviously property tax. I hope we get through the first part of it then, so we can actually, like, I think there's a real opportunity to celebrate this, even if it's not your preferred method. I think it shows that the legislature is absolutely both dealing with the reform and the relief piece of it. Plus it gives us time. You know, I think the people who aren't necessarily as excited about this, the only time you necessarily get them to the table to fix some of the clerical parts that actually make it workable is once they know it's going to be law. So that's helpful. Like, we're not in this to make people feel pain. We're in this to figure out a better relationship between government and the taxpayer. So hopefully that brings people to the table, and we have time before the end of the session to make sure we get it in the best shape forward moving forward. I obviously, my grandmother was the head of the North Dakota Mental Health Association for 20 years. I was a criminal defense attorney for a decade. I think free through recovery and figuring out how we deliver services to communities that don't have addiction counselors, that don't have enough resources, I think can be a real significant impact on prison overcrowding, workforce, general lost hours of productivity a day for moms and dads and brothers and sisters, and moving forward in that. And then I think the conversation that we're having a lot in these hallways that probably doesn't get talked about as much is how we move gas from Western North Dakota to Eastern North Dakota, and what that looks like for state revenue moving forward based on, you know, I don't want stranded oil because I can't move the gas. Right. And also we have communities all across the state that are starved for power, and we have the ability to do some of that. So I think if we get a real handle on what that looks like moving forward and the state's role in that, we don't want to build a pipeline and we don't want to own a pipeline, but we want to be able to make sure we're creating a policy to move that gas, because unfortunately it's really expensive to do, and end use contracts 13, 14 years down the road are problematic for pipeline companies to put that infrastructure in the ground.
Very good. Well, those are things that we'll track here. Really appreciate you coming on. And as we jump off, is UND hockey going to win it all this year? Do they got it in the tank?
You know, we've had really good years where we didn't quite get there. This year was kind of a struggle all the way through. They played really well this weekend down in Omaha, and actually played really well last Friday against Omaha. Let's just take it one game at a time. Yeah. I'll tell you what I've noticed in this space. Get a hot goalie and anything can happen.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. Well, I mean, they felt down the basketball team with the 50 points. They had a Trey Eagle staff, 50 points, 50 point games. That's pretty good.
I think we had a really unique one-off that probably has never happened before. We had a lieutenant governor drop the puck to her son, who was on the UND hockey team last Friday. And that was a pretty special moment to be there.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. Really appreciate you coming on, making time for this. Appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.